Hello and welcome to The Box Seat. You're looking to anything and everything sports related. I'm Alec Dietz.
I'm Andy Amashta.
And I'm Chris Sankiko. And today, we'll discuss the recent happenings in UW baseball, track, and men's basketball, recap all things NBA All-Star Weekend, and look ahead to the second half of the NBA season. But first, as always, we will turn it over to Alec Dietz for this weekend's UW athletic schedule. What do you got?
Well, lots of stuff is happening. Softball is continuing its long 10-day road trip. They're now in Palm Springs after finishing undefeated in Texas, where they'll take on Notre Dame and number 6 Texas A&M.
They've had a great start to the season.
They have.
Number one in the country.
Pretty impressive. I mean, the Pac-12 is always really good at softball, but they're putting themselves in a good position at least to start.
Yeah, how many Pac-12 teams are in the top 25 right now? It's like 5 or 6, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure about top 25, but there's 3 in the top, like, 5 or 10.
Okay. Yeah.
Oregon, UCLA, and UW are all top 10, top 5 caliber teams.
Okay. Yeah.
And Kirsten Thomas, obviously, is still hitting incredible. She leads the Pac-12.
I mean, the whole team is hitting incredible. They're leading the country in, like, almost every offensive statistic.
Yeah, Thomas is at 590, and Van Zee is right behind her at 575. 575 for Van Zee. 25 runs for Thomas and 26 for Van Zee. And those are two of their players. I mean, I legitimately think they have the best first four in their order in the country.
I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, what is it? Who the traditional powers, like Florida and
Oklahoma,
like they're usually head and shoulders above the rest of the other teams in the country. But yeah, UW is looking really good to start the season off. There's something like outscoring opponents for a while, like 70-3 or something.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
And they recently had some trouble. They only beat Texas the other day 2-1.
Yeah, I know. The Josh had to stay for a whole game.
Yeah,
that was crazy.
He'll tell you all about it. He was tweeting during his midterms, guys.
Yeah, he was all the time.
Yeah.
Then he has that 5-minute walk where he misses a little bit. But yeah. You know.
So we'll see once they start playing. You know, obviously number 6, Texas A&M. They have to go play Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
Alabama is coming up on their schedule, and they're a pretty good team. And then obviously when you roll into the Pac-12 schedule. So
absolutely.
We'll see if
and plus,
for
like,
real.
They've been. There's a little criticism about their strength of schedule right now. But once they get some of these bigger games under their belt, if they can win out, that'll be quite a resume going into the Pac-12 season.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll do better than Arizona State was entering basketball, though.
The women's basketball team, amidst a very tough year, is going to finish off their season against, I think, number 16-ranked Stanford. That's tonight. And then they're going to take on Cal on Sunday, who actually beat Stanford the other day.
Well, Stanford beat them in the first game, and then Cal won the second
game. Yeah, Cal actually beat them most recently.
Yeah, and Cal has been getting top 25 votes. They're just missing it by a little bit. So
yeah.
They're almost a top 25 opponent on their own, so
but I did
it's gonna be rough.
I did want to shout out Hannah Johnson, who's getting double double after double double for UW, and she's heavily undersized. So
yeah,
the fact
that
she's playing so well, and Amber Melgoza.
Melgoza, of course, also
6'1". Yeah, she plays like center for him.
She plays. Oh, man.
Yeah, I was like 6'1". How's that?
She gets double doubles.
Yeah.
So anyway, she's been great, and Amber Melgoza has been amazing as a sharpshooter. So. I doubt they win those final two games, but those two are having really good individual years for them.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of sad that season hasn't quite turned out where you thought, but, I mean, coaching transition is always rough.
Well, and they lose.
And you lose.
All-time leading scorer ever.
Yeah, Kelsey
Your best
Plum,
rebounder
so.
In the Pac-12 ever, and Chantel Osahor. And then Katie Collier was a
good player, too. A ton of attrition and, like, a coaching turnover. This is kind of expected, but at the same time, like, you always hope to do a little better, but I think we could be looking up next year. You never know.
Never know.
Always next season.
The gymnastics team is going to take on Stanford at home this Saturday. And the baseball team is at home for the first time this year against UC Riverside.
Four-game series.
They're obviously coming off a 2-2 split with
Sacramento State.
What did you make of that series first?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, this team, just like every other Lindsay Meggs team, is obviously going to be built around defense and pitching. The pitching staff was incredible. Joe Demers pitched a fantastic game for the season opener. He got a no decision, but he was phenomenal. Lights out, 6 innings, no earned runs. Steve Emanuels was good in his relief appearance in that game, pitched 2 shutout innings. He got kind of roughed up in his start in game 4, but that could have also been that he was just tired because he threw 23 pitches on Friday and then had to come back and start on Monday. Chris Michaels didn't have as solid of a start to his season. Jordan Jones actually had a really great game. he was just begging for some kind of run support, and then he got lit in the seventh inning. I feel kind of bad for him. He had such a strong line going into that last inning. He looked like he was going to take him through seven, which doesn't happen as often in college as it does in professionals where most people see it. But he got roughed up in that last inning, and the scoreline was not kind to him at the end of the day. He's carrying a 7.11 ERA heading into his next start this weekend. But he pitched a solid six, which is normally all you'd ask from a college pitcher. So that, and then the bullpen this weekend was absolutely phenomenal. Only gave up like a couple runs. Hardy, Nirenberg, a bunch of the freshmen. They got Dylan Lamb, who's actually Jake Lamb, the All-Star's brother.
Yeah, from the D-backs.
So he pitched. He's actually a sidearmer. It's kind of funny whenever the announcer is like, there's somebody warming up in the bullpen. I can't tell who it is because I can't see their number, but he's a sidearmer. It's like, oh, it's Dylan Lamb because he's the only one we have. Lucas Knowles, actually, who's a redshirt freshman. He had Tommy John his senior year in high school, so he didn't pitch last year. He's a redshirt freshman this year. He's actually pitched very well for them out of the pen as a lefty specialist. But this team, the main problem comes from the fact that this team lacks offense. They don't score runs. We have no home runs in four games, which compared to UC Riverside, who are coming in, have six. Mm. Joe Wainhouse, who's actually one of the relievers and hits as the DH most of the time, is leading the team. He's hitting .429. Mason Cirillo, the transfer from Bellevue, who actually started out as a Cougar, he's hitting really well. Him and Graffinino, who's the shortstop, are the only players who have hits in every single game so far. Christian Jones started hot. He's kind of cooled off a little bit. And then Levi Jordan stepped it up real big in the last game, went 3-for-4. But they need to find some solid offensive contributors if they want to make a run at making a regional and get out of the Pac-12, because the Pac-12 is one of the most competitive baseball divisions in the country. It'll be an interesting season. If they can get some guys to step up, the pitching will definitely carry them through. Their defense was questionable, but they're the best defensive team in the Pac-12 last year, so I have faith that they'll turn that around. But that's how the season started. We'll see how they go against Riverside, who's a tough challenge in its own right.
What are you expecting to see out of them this weekend? Is it going to be like another split, or?
This is tough. I'm going to go maybe with the home field advantage, we can snag a 3-1. I don't think they're going to sweep very often this season, and Riverside's a better team than you would assume on paper because it's Riverside. They're coached by Troy Percival, the former Angels closer, and his son's actually on the team, so that'll be kind of exciting to see. But they're competitive in their own right, and if the Huskies can get into their bullpen, that's Riverside's big weakness. But Riverside's offense is so strong right now. It's going to take a big effort from the pitchers to keep them close, especially when the Huskies struggle to score runs.
All right, and lastly, we're going to move on to track and field. The MPSF championships are occurring this week. It's the last chance for track athletes to solidify their spots or perhaps make a run at qualifying for NCAAs in March in College Station. Colby Gilbert in the 3K and Chase Smith are probably the most solid ins right now. Chase Smith in the pole vault was only the fourth Husky ever to clear 18 feet. He's currently sitting, I think, tied for like ninth place, but it's really like third because mm-hmm. just the way it works. So he's pretty solidly in, and I was talking to him this week, and he said like if he didn't make it this week, it would be like the first time ever someone had cleared 18 feet and like not gotten in. So he's pretty solidly in. Colby Gilbert ran an incredible race at the Husky Classic where he's probably sitting in the back of the pack for just about every lap, but like the second to the last two. And he came back and ended up winning it, put up his second best time running that event ever. And he's sitting in fourth place right now overall in the 3K. So he'll definitely make it. And it's the top 16 individuals in each event and top 12 in each relay. So those guys are solidly in. Jack Lemke in the shot put is currently sitting in 11th.
So it's questionable.
It's questionable. And Coach Metcalf was telling me that there's people who could go out and throw 64 feet and beat him out, you know, by an inch or two.
So is he going to throw this weekend?
So he'll throw this weekend. Okay. Chase is jumping. Colby is not going to run this week.
Yeah.
So Chase is jumping. Lemke is going to throw. And the last person who is in as of now is Amy Eloise Neal.
Of course.
3K. But she's in 12th.
Yeah, okay, so another questionable one.
Another questionable one. And she's not running in the 3K this week. She's running in the mile.
Okay.
So I think right now they're banking on her making that, qualifying for that. Hopefully, maybe qualifying for the mile and then having the choice to run either of those two.
Yeah, yeah.
She's still recovering from an injury, so I'm not sure how much I expect. I'm not sure I expect a winning performance from her in the mile this weekend. But, I mean, I could be surprised. She was a, you know, cross-country runner-up, so even hurt, she could put together a really good performance.
Absolutely, although we've talked about it before, cross-country is so different from track. it's always a little questionable, but she's such a fantastic athlete that anything could really happen.
Yeah. So those people that are in right now, sitting on the edge, surprisingly, junior Fred Huxham in the 3K. He could potentially join Colby Gilbert in the 3K. He's currently sitting at, his time was 7:56.98. He needs to get it in about the 7:52-ish range to qualify, but Coach Metcalf was telling me he could get, if he hits 7:50, which is definitely reasonable, he's in. So look, watch for Huxham this week. The women's DMR is another one that's really, really, really close. It's a long distance race, so they did really well on the first weekend. They got 11:08.83, and they needed about the 11:04-ish range to get in. So all 4 seconds really is nothing in these kind of distance races.
Yeah, definitely.
So they're close. On that team is Maddie Myers, and she's close. She's in 25th right now. She ran a 4:39.08 at the Husky Invite, and she needs to get about sub 4:37. So, again, you're talking about just a few seconds.
Yeah.
And lastly, I'll just go over some people who could probably do really well at MPSFs but probably aren't going to qualify for nationals. Hannah Derby is a legitimate shot at winning the 800 meter. She PR'd and did really, really well at the Husky Classic against post-collegiates. So I could see her doing really well. Chase Smith is the defending champ. So I could see him pulling it out there. Iman Brown in the 200 is obviously the school record holder. She broke her own record at the Don Kirby invite.
She's a freshman.
And she's a freshman. And she has a better time than last year's NCAA champ, Ariana Washington of Oregon.
Yeah, crazy.
So I could see her busting. And she's also running the 60 this week, which will be her debut in that event. And I feel like that field isn't as strong as the 200 field is really strong.
Yeah.
So I feel like she could win the 60. I think the men's 4x4 team is, they're 2 seconds away from qualifying for NCAAs, but because there are so many other teams that are going to be gunning for that spot, I think it's going to be hard for them to get in.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they could do really well. USC is they actually have the world record. They broke the world record earlier this year.
Yeah.
But because they're prepping for NCAAs, they're going to run their B and C teams.
Yeah.
Who still might be better than our guys, because USC is a loaded sprinting school.
Yeah.
But you never know. I think the men's team, they have the second best time out of MPSF schools, so they could pull out a win in that event. Obviously, the women's DMR went over. They could do really well. Khalil Winfrey in the 60-meter is going to put together a good performance. Huxham could win. And then, obviously, Maddie Myers. So I think they have a really good chance at scoring really well at this meet. I don't know if they'll win. And there are a few guys to watch out for NCAA qualification.
Now we're going to throw it over to Chris to talk about what UW basketball needs to do to make the NCAA tournament.
Well, I think it's pretty simple in terms of what they need to do to make the NCAA tournament. It's to win out. Playing Cal, they're playing the two Oregon schools again, but this time at home. Obviously, they had the three-game skid, including the two losses to Oregon and the Utah game, which I don't think we got to talk about last week.
No, we didn't.
But it was probably the worst game I've seen this season.
That was rough.
Worse than Oregon?
It was pretty bad. It was really boring. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Because even like UW had all the momentum in the first half. They had an 8-point lead going to halftime. But I was just sitting there and I was like, what did they really do to get this lead?
And then it all crashed.
And then even the momentum changed. Like, it didn't really feel like there was a huge swing of momentum. It just all of a sudden they were up by double digits and they won the game by 12 points, 70-58. David Collette, I guess, for Utah, he had 16 of his 22 points in the second half. He was the leading scorer. Noah Dickerson, who had been averaging a double-double over the previous five games, was limited to 3 points. And he got his one field goal in the first 2 minutes of the game. And then he made one free throw, and that was it.
Yeah, you definitely need more production there. Yeah. But, I mean, also, like, when the rest of the team isn't shooting well, that wasn't a great shooting game for the Huskies at all either. Like, then they can just collapse on Dickerson in the low post.
He was visibly frustrated.
Yeah.
You could see it. I think he fouled out with, 10 minutes to go?
Yeah, he fouled out with a lot of time to go. The Huskies shot 7 for 20 from 3. So obviously outside shooting was not on. And you could tell the entire Utah game plan was just to shut him down. Like,
mm-hmm.
Collette, they were all just committed to just sucking down inside and just making sure.
And it worked really well.
No factor. He was practically invisible the entire game.
Yeah.
I was amazed, considering how well he had been playing.
Yeah, what he did to the Arizona schools and everything like that.
Yeah. But then obviously they got off the skid against Colorado, winning by 23. Alec, you were there, so you can talk about that. What was sort of the vibe like in terms of Isaiah Thomas night?
Oh, it was crazy. For one, Isaiah Thomas is such a humble guy. And,
class act, man.
His speech was really, I mean, a step outside my journalist role a little bit. I think, like, I don't know, it brings back really good memories of being a Husky fan. Like, I remember exactly where I was when he made the shot against Arizona.
Where were you?
I was sitting in my room watching it all by myself, and I, like, went crazy, and, like, my parents thought something had, like, happened. So I, like, went nuts, and they're like, what the hell happened? And I'm like, no, it's good. Isaiah, we just won the Pac-10 championship. But anyway, so that was really cool. And, you know, obviously the players didn't want to let that down. I think David Crisp said, like, you know, we couldn't ruin his night.
Oh, absolutely.
This is his jersey retirement. We can't lose on Isaiah Thomas's jersey retirement night.
Yeah, definitely. And so, you saw, like, the whole thing with David Crisp, like, Isaiah Thomas staying home and going to UW.
Both from Tacoma. Yeah,
really made it a reality for kids from Washington to look at UW and say, like, I want to play basketball here.
So
he meant so much to the program.
Inspiration, definitely.
But absolutely deserved. And
that was cool. Noah, and they played really, really well. Noah Dickerson dropped a double-double, 14 points, 11 rebounds.
10 rebounds.
Matisse Thybulle.
He was 10 rebounds. Ah, I'm looking at the stats right now.
Oh, okay.
Matisse Thybulle went crazy.
Yes. Matisse Thybulle had 24 points in the second half.
Yes, he did.
26 in the
game. He scored two in the first half.
Yeah.
And then he went off. He made threes. A lot of, I think they got to the line a lot, and they harassed Colorado. The first, like, four or five possessions were fast breaks where they just threw it ahead.
Wow.
Uh-huh. I mean, Colorado is one of their biggest weaknesses. I wrote the scouting report on them. One of their biggest weaknesses was always going to be turning the ball over. And when you have Matisse Thybulle and the defense that the Huskies play, like, you have to imagine they're licking their lips looking at Colorado.
Well, and I think David Crisp is underrated
as a defender.
Transition.
I definitely agree. We talk about this every time we watch games. Like, if David Crisp gets into the paint, he's such a good finisher under the rim. It's just getting into the paint.
He settles too much.
He settles
too much for outside shots.
It's not his thing. He's a slasher.
He went 1-for-5 from three.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is that, but if he does get into the lane and he, like, penetrates and kicks it out.
Yeah, even if he doesn't kick it out.
He's got a good
floater. That's true. His floater's pretty good.
He's a very good finisher under the rim. Like, when he's in there with the bigger guys, he's not a tall guy. No. How tall is he? Like, 6 foot?
I think he's six.
Flat almost?
He's 6 foot.
Six flat, six
yeah.
Foot. Yeah. Like, he's a good finisher even when he's got, even when he's in there with all the trees.
Yeah, the other thing I wanted to talk about, too, was that Dominic Green got the start over Jalen Well, which I thought was really interesting. After the press conference, did he say why he decided to make that change?
Yeah, Coach Hop basically said it was to provide a different kind of energy. I think they're trying to test a different lineup. Bringing a guy like Jalen off the bench who can, like, create his own offense, I think really benefited them. And a guy like Dom Green just getting shooters out in space. That starting lineup doesn't have a ton of shooting.
Dominic Green is the most efficient shooter on the team by far. Especially when he gets into the game, he's always good for at least a couple threes.
Yeah, definitely. And you don't want your point taking too many threes, especially not David Crisp.
No offense
to David Crisp. I mean, he can shoot, but, like, not with the ball in his hands.
Not with the volume that he does.
Yeah.
He needs to pick and choose more.
And then Thybulle, he's kind of streaky.
Thybulle's also very streaky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jalen is also very streaky from the three-point line.
Yeah.
Noah Dickerson and Sam Timmons obviously don't shoot. So I think they needed a guy that they could space the floor out a little bit, especially against a really quick and small Colorado team.
Yeah.
And get Dickerson in the post because you're so spread out.
Because then
you can get a one-on-one with Noah Dickerson.
No, the other thing, interesting thing, too, is that, you know, obviously late on this season has been Dominic Green, but, like, in the beginning of the season, everyone thought it was going to be Hamir Wright.
Yeah.
He would come in and drain, like, two or three threes, and then he would be out, and then all of a sudden his production's really, like, dipped quite a bit, and Green has sort of picked up the slack.
Well, and we were talking about at the beginning of the season, like, them bringing a different guy off the bench each time in all these games. Dominic Green's the guy now.
Oh, absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
Maybe he's starting, but he'd, like,
start.
He was
and then it would
the
be
guy.
Noel.
If he starts, Noel is the guy off the bench. Yeah.
So, you know, I think we were talking about it, but they definitely, as the season has worn on, solidified who their guys are. I think Coach Hop was still trying to figure out, like, who's going to compete for my team down the stretch here.
Yeah.
And Dom Green has definitely earned his keep.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He was doing a lot of, like, gut feeling coaching in terms of, like, placing players in, just really too much regard for, like, specific matchups and things like that. But then once he realized that Dominic Green was just coming in and he would get 9 points and a half, like, every game, you realize, you know, I can put my faith in him and, like, even insert him into the starting lineup, as obviously last week. So,
And I think it gives Jalen Noel a little time to cool off, because we've been talking about this for a little while too. He's not been He's not been playing at the level that he was at the beginning of the season, like, no question.
Yeah, he shot 5 for 12 in his 31 minutes.
He struggled against Colorado. He got going a little bit in the second half. He made a dunk off a really nice feed from David Chris.
Mm-hmm. I think this was against Utah, but that Naz Carter dunk?
Yeah.
Oh, that was insane. He did that with
ridiculous.
He dunked on Dickerson. That was really the only highlight of the game.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But like when he did that, I was like, Naz Carter?
Yeah.
Get up. That sounds crazy.
He had another putback dunk earlier. Too.
Yeah.
Also, Jay-Z, where you at, man?
I know.
Come on. We need you to show up to one of these games, man.
Yeah,
Jay-Z,
yeah,
come on. I'm shouting you out right now.
See, if he listens to this, then we've really made
come
it.
Come support.
We have made it.
But anyway, I think Jalen's been in a funk, and I definitely think putting him on the – I mean, you don't want to destroy his confidence, but putting him on the bench and having him be the guy – off the bench and able to match up against different guys.
And he started the second half too.
Yes, he did.
So like I think it's just a matter of like letting him like take a breather, just step back, like look, like we're not completely reliant on you anymore. And so now like just get back to the basics, back to those fundamentals and just keep doing what he was doing to get them to that point earlier in the season. And I think I kind of doubt that we'll see Dom Green start next couple games. I'm going to guess that Jalen will be back, but at the same time I think it'll be a nice like it was just like a mental break for him.
I mean, as of Tuesday, he hadn't decided. Coach Hopkins hadn't decided who was going to make the start.
I mean, he's always going to say that.
Yeah.
I think it's up in the air. I really do.
I wouldn't be surprised, but I think it's going to be Noel again.
I think Dom Green, from a matchup standpoint, is harder to defend for teams.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes. He's
pretty tall, too.
Yeah, he is. It's also much
harder to defend someone off the ball than it is on the ball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, Jalen's definitely a ball dominant player.
And he's a ball dominant player. You know what you have to do. You're going to put your best perimeter defender on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to put him on Thibault. He's not very great off the dribble.
Yeah.
David Crisp, you know.
You want him to shoot threes.
You want him to shoot threes. So you put a good defender on him, but I think Dominic Green requires a different kind of player to guard,
especially considering
the three-point threat.
Yeah, that's the thing is that the three-point threat, obviously, as you said before, the starters really don't have a ton of outside shooting. And so having that right off the bat to start out games definitely gives them an added dimension if it works out well, as long as he keeps making them as efficiently as he makes them.
And gets you out to an early lead.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, especially if he's making those threes early on in the game. I mean, those are big. And then you bring in Jalen, and he can sort of settle in. So
plus, then he's playing against the second line, too. So
yeah, so we'll see what he decides.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
I think he's going to roll with Dom Green. I do.
Yeah. Especially making more opportunities for Noah Dickerson. That's the thing, is that your offense is predicated around Noah Dickerson, no matter what.
All right, now we're going to roll over to the bark. It's been a while.
I've missed it.
That's right.
I enjoy these.
So we're going to start with the NBA All-Star weekend. There are a lot of interesting stuff that happened. I guess I'll start with who won each event first. In the three-point contest, Devin Booker won. He beat Klay Thompson in the finals.
That would be Chris's pick.
That's my correct
pick. That was crazy.
Chris is correct.
I mean, Klay Thompson had a great round, but Devin Booker was 28
points.
Just insane. 28
in the final round.
So, again, that event's getting a lot more fun to watch.
Like we said last time, I almost enjoyed that one. I think I do enjoy the three-point contest more than I do enjoy the dunk contest now. It's so fun to watch.
Not this year.
Not quite this year.
This year, the dunk contest winner, obviously Donovan Mitchell. But Larry Nance, sorry, Larry, for saying what I did about you last week.
Yeah.
That was incredible. That was amazing. He was good. He proved me wrong. That was good.
It's another correct call for me.
Oh, yes.
His dad's jersey.
Chris did call.
Chris is on a roll.
Yeah, he was on a
roll right now.
But Donovan Mitchell won, so
now we're about to get off the roll.
Alec got it right, though, with the Donovan Mitchell. That tribute to
Vince Carter.
That was pretty legendary. That was very nice. We're talking about, like, wasn't a huge fan of his like earlier dunks. Victor Oladipo deserves a shout out for that the Black Panther
dunk.
Yeah.
Chadwick Boseman gave him the mask.
That was the
Dennis Smith Jr. dunk where he went between the legs
and that was the best dunk
of the night.
That was my pick.
Did you see the report about what Dennis Smith, the dunk he was going to do if he got to the final round or something like that?
Oh yeah, what did
he
say?
He was gonna do it with J. Cole. So
yeah.
I think he was gonna throw it off the board and then dunk it, and then J. Cole would then dunk it afterward.
Oh, my God.
Dude,
that's what he said.
So
right. Yeah.
Anyway, Spencer Dinwiddie won the Skills Challenge, so we all got that one wrong.
Yep. Nice job, Chris.
Andre Drummond.
I was close,
didn't
you know.
You got knocked out in the
first round loss. It was close, though. He was a finalist.
To my guy, Lauri Markkanen.
Yeah, Lauri Markkanen made it.
Lauri.
I think it's Lauri.
I don't know. It's Finnish.
We'll figure it out.
It's the Markkanen boy.
Yeah. he made it to the last round.
Yeah,
so you were close.
I was close.
I thought Jamal Murray was going to do better. I think he got past the first round, and then he lost to Dinwiddie.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know. Looking at it, I was like, it could totally be Dinwiddie, but I can't get myself to pick a Brooklyn net to win anything.
The skills challenge is such a toss-up. Like, it could be anybody.
Yeah,
you never
know. Yeah,
it's
kind of who's feeling it, and let's be honest, it's kind of like the least fun of all of these.
I think it's kind of fun to see them both mess up and then, like, frantically, like, because they're both competing against each other at the same time. Like, oh, crap, the ball didn't go through when I passed it.
Do you see Joel Embiid?
Yeah.
He, like, did his passes, like, really quick so you could just go.
It can be entertaining, but it is a little bit more of a toss-up. It's kind of whoever's feeling it in the moment.
Yeah. And then Team Clippers won the celebrity game.
Let's go.
That's Andy's call.
Just Quavo.
Only me. Quavo bailed me out. I'm not going to lie. He went crazy. I always kind of forget that he can ball. Like, there's, like, clips that come out once in a while of, like, him, like, playing basketball.
Oh, well, it's always the Quavo and Shareef O'Neal ones.
Yeah,
They're always at the same gym, and he's, like, making floaters, and then Sharif's just dunking everywhere.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, plus, Bieber joined the Lakers team late, and I wanted to change my pick after that. Late,
no, that's true also. I didn't remember that Quavo joined the team when we started, and if I had remembered that, I probably would have picked the Clippers. But the fact that, the Justin Bieber was terrible.
He's awful. He's really the worst.
He was guarding Quavo for most of the game. Oh, man, dropped 19 on him.
That's because they did a song together. They did a hit song together. So they have to guard each other.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, and the last
event. Wait, hold on. You don't want to talk about your girl, Rachel?
Rachel had 17 points. She would have been the MVP.
You did MVP.
She got blocked by Quavo, though.
Yeah.
My goodness.
I don't want to talk about it.
That was crazy. No, I enjoy the Celebrity All-Star Game. It's fun to watch.
No,
it's really fun. It's entertainment.
Nate Robinson, too. He had some pretty nice moments there.
I mean, I feel like Nate Robinson will still be balling when he's, like, in his, like, 50s. Like, when most basketball players, like, can't walk anymore, like, Nate Robinson will still be balling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And in the last...
Wait, isn't he going to be in... He's going to be in the Uncle Drew movie, isn't he?
Is he?
I think he is. I don't know. Like the Kyrie
like
Irving
Shaq's
Uncle Drew
gonna
thing.
Be in the
Shaq's
Uncle,
definitely gonna
Uncle
be in
it.
It's like
movie.
Candace Parker, and I think that Nate Robinson's gonna be in it. Hold on, confirmation.
Is this really?
Is this really happening, Andy?
Andy.
Yes. Andy is checking. The noise you hear is typing.
They can't hear it.
If we edit it in, then they will hear it.
I mean, you'd have to go. Yes, he is.
All right, great.
Nate Robinson is gonna be in the Uncle Drew movie. I'm excited. I love Uncle Drew.
You heard it here fourth.
Not even fourth.
are we ready to move on?
Are we good to go?
Are we good, Andy?
Yeah, we're good.
All right. Sorry, you interrupted me twice.
It's all good.
All right. In the primetime event, Team LeBron versus Team Curry, Steph Curry was surrounded at the end of the game by KD and LeBron, arguably the two best players in the game. And
So much length. I don't know, you can't get a shot off with that.
Also, he's like
6'3". On the sideline, yeah.
But anyway, Team LeBron wins 148-145. Coming to our question now, Andy, we're going to start with you. Do you like the new format?
Oh, absolutely. This was so much fun. The pickup game, like, got those kind of vibes. And then also, like, just it made the players play a little more defense. It was just an all-around, like, better game. It was fun to watch. The players were having fun. Those jerseys are fire, by the way. I like that they put some kind of team like identifier on them while also making them like the black and white. It looks like a 2K Street kind of.
That's really what it was. It was just like the white or the black with the logo.
Yeah,
it still looked cool.
No,
yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it. I'm really excited for the fact that they want to televise the draft next year. I heard that LaMarcus Aldridge was the last pick.
And Horford was one before him.
Yeah.
Yep.
As we've talked about on this show.
Several times.
One of the more generic players in the NBA.
Yeah. What do you guys think about Jimmy Buckets not playing at all?
Ouch. Yeah.
Ouch.
I mean, who knows why?
Who knows why?
Who knows why?
We'll never know. He'll neither confirm nor deny why he played.
My only thing is, like if he knew, maybe, because he was saying, like, it was a rest thing, like, if he knew, then maybe just, like, make up an injury, because, like, there are other guys who, like, deserve to be there. Chris Paul, obviously, like, the Rockets are the best team in the NBA right now, record-wise. I know Alec would disagree. But they only have one All-Star, and the Warriors have four. But at the same, and then like there's guys like CJ McCollum. Like,
you can't see my face right now, but it's a face of disapproval.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like there were other guys who deserve to be there, and like I'm sure Jimmy Butler
JaVale
has his reasons.
JaVale McGee.
Hey, I would love. Hey, JaVale McGee was in the dunk contest a couple years ago. We did the two basket dunk. That's legendary. People forget that.
Oh yeah.
But that's my only thing about it. But like at the same time, like. He can do whatever he wants. He's Jimmy Buckets. Like, I'm not gonna tell him to play or not. But yeah, Otherwise, I think this is a great All-Star weekend.
Hey, oh, yeah, I definitely love the format. Steph Curry, though, he missed, what, his first six
shots? Yeah, he was like 1 for 7
like
from behind the arc.
I was very disappointed.
Klay Thompson had to had to carry him through, man. He had like 15 in the second quarter.
Yeah. I think Steph has had a hard time in All-Star games in years past. I think he's scored over like 15 points in any of the games.
I mean, let's be honest. His most memorable All-Star moment is getting dunked on by Giannis.
Yeah.
Or when he, like, fell before Giannis dunked all over him.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. The fact that Durant was on the other team made it even more difficult.
Yeah.
Just to get shots off and stuff like that.
Well, and he's also taking shots. If you watch the game, he takes shots from, like, half court and stuff. Because it's the All-Star game.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
And he's not making them. And, you know, that's going to happen. But Klay was really good. DeMar DeRozan was fun to watch. Giannis was obviously really fun to watch. Joel Embiid.
I love Joel Embiid.
Joel Embiid is the perfect guy for this event.
He had 19 points.
Yeah. You hear what he had told Giannis after the All-Star game? He's like, hey, trust the process. Come to Philadelphia and play with me.
He's recruiting.
He should go to Milwaukee.
He should go to Milwaukee?
Steph's recruiting Giannis. You didn't hear all that stuff?
No, I didn't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was telling him how good of a leader he was and all that kind of stuff. There's this video of him like being like a mentor, and I'm like, yeah, Giannis to the Warriors. Here we go.
I mean, leader. Did you see him fill that? I don't remember who it was, that rookie's car with popcorn for not putting a towel on his seat.
Yeah.
that was amazing. But let's be honest, this was just mainly also a big recruiting event for the Lakers, trying to sign everybody to come play with Lonzo Ball.
I tell you though, that LA Rim did not like Paul George.
No,
Kevin Hart. Remember Kevin Hart against Draymond Green all those years ago?
Yeah.
He had 11 points. You know how many points Paul George had?
Go for
9.
It. Yep.
He literally lost to Kevin Hart.
I mean, Draymond tied him.
What are you doing?
What are you doing, Paul?
Yeah.
Did you see Kevin Hart before all the All-Star activities? Oh, my God.
The player intros.
Oh, my God.
That was a little rough.
Weren't those great? Weren't those just the best player
intros? Let's not talk about anything that happened before the All-Star
game. I usually like the intros, too. Those are usually like one of the coolest parts where they come out of the floor and it's like mist everywhere. But
that's true. They normally have some epic intro, but Kevin Hart's got to have a joke, you know.
But they
quick little quip
before
everyone gets introduced. And then he couldn't pronounce Giannis's name. He just like, I give up.
I think that was the joke.
I think that joke's been a little past now.
Yeah. It's definitely a past. He's one of the best players in the NBA.
You better know, or just call him Greek Freak.
When he was an 18-year-old and you're like, all right, this guy's like
got a
not
crazy
great,
last name.
His last name's crazy. Yeah, all right. But now, legitimate MVP candidate, don't mess up his name.
Yeah, that was the only questionable part, I think. Not the only questionable part.
Oh.
Anyone want to talk about it?
If you want to start us off.
Chris is not happy about Fergie.
Can you see? let's play some basketball, guys.
Let's play some basketball.
Let's play some basketball.
Nah.
That was terrible.
Yeah, it was very interesting.
What an embarrassment. That's the worst rendition I've ever heard.
Did you guys see all the Facebook and like Twitter videos of like the player reactions like on the floor? Like
Draymond. Draymond's was so good.
And Chance the Rapper is just like looking up at the screen. He's like, what is going on?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's so bad.
It didn't strike. You know, I appreciate artists taking risks. It just didn't
work out. Not there.
That's what she said. She's like, I always like to take risks artistically, but this one obviously didn't pan out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just bad.
It wasn't
artistic risk.
Good.
It was straight up bad.
Yeah, whoever's counseling her is like, yeah, that's good. You
Who
should do
picked
that.
Fergie?
I don't know.
Who picked Fergie?
I don't know.
Adam Silver, what are you doing?
Out of all people, you picked Fergie.
Yeah, in L.A.
Yeah.
In L.A.? You could literally get Chance out there, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he'll probably do it if they ever go to Chicago, but.
Well, yeah. Chance was there.
Yeah.
He was there.
Yeah, he was just there.
Pull Fergie off as soon as she misses that first note.
Wait, can't Chadwick Boseman sing? He was James Brown.
Get on up.
Yeah, and get on up.
Yeah. They had like probably 50 people in the audience. LeBron. Put LeBron out there to sing it. I'll take LeBron.
He'll just do spoken word. He'll be like, yeah, you know, oh, say, can you see?
Like Carl Lewis? Have you seen the Carl Lewis one?
No.
Oh, my God. It's not good. It's
spoken
word.
It's spoken word?
It's spoken word. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I'll look that up after this.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, no. I was just going to say one more thing is that I think the defense, they had a little bit more incentive to play defense because they're playing for charity, obviously.
They also got paid more money for the winners.
Yeah, they got paid more money for the winners. But those two incentives, like, I think really, like, and also just the new format. It's everything, all the circumstances that were surrounding the game. Incentivize the players to play more defense, and I think as long as they keep doing that, it's gonna be a more exciting product to watch.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Like, I think this is how they move away from what the Pro Bowl is, to be more like if let's be honest, like the MLB doesn't do a lot of things great compared to other big sports, but they do the All-Star game well.
Well, they should still do it for home field advantage, in my opinion. It makes it more exciting to watch.
It does make it more exciting to watch, but at the same time, I understand like the whole record thing. But like the MLB All-Star game, like because like you have the best pitchers, there's just this attitude going in. Like the pitchers are like, I want to strike out the best hitters in the game. And the hitters are all like, I want to get hits off of the best hitters in the game. Like Josh Donaldson in his first like game hits like an infield single and tries to like sprint it out because he wants to get an All-Star hit. Like. Yeah. By doing this with the NBA, they can get away from that Pro Bowl kind of feel. Nobody wants to take it seriously, to being something more like the MLB All-Star Game, which I think is a really good thing.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Next, we're going to talk about the NBA possibly considering a play-in game for the playoffs.
Are we talking about just general new?
Among other formats.
Yeah, among other new formats. Yeah. Reported on yesterday was an idea that would have basically a mini tournament before the playoffs between the 7 through 10 seeds in each conference. So the 7th and 8th seeds would play, and the winner of that game would be the 7th seed, and then the 9th and 10th teams would play, and the winner of that game would play the loser of the 7-8 game, and then the winner of that game would be the 8th seed. Chris, we'll start with you on this one. One, do you think that's the way they should do it? And two, if not, what should they do?
Well, that explanation was very complicated.
Sorry.
And just for that, no, it's not your fault.
It's not you. It's the format's complicated.
It's definitely not your fault. The format's really complicated. And I think that's just, you know, that's sort of just narrowing down like, oh, we're going to, with these four teams, these, you know, sort of bottom of the litter.
Bubble teams.
Yeah, they're basically just bubble teams. And basically having them just play, I don't know, it's already an 82-game season. So it's like, why include more games like that?
If you didn't make it, you didn't make it.
If you didn't make it, you didn't make it. But honestly, I like more of the idea of the 1 through 16. Just because you want to see the best teams. I don't want to see all these below 500 Eastern Conference teams that they're going to get swept by the one seed. I want competitiveness all the way around. And even if, you know...
And you don't want to see, like, the best game be the Western Conference semifinal.
Yeah, that's the thing. If two Western Conference teams made the NBA Finals, I wouldn't really care. Because, you know, obviously the Super Bowl is, what, two East Coast teams? Even though it's NFC-AFC, it's still two teams from the East Coast. The World Series... Obviously, you can have two LA teams or two California teams duke it out. I still think it should be the best teams go off in the NBA Finals. I don't think the Western Conference Finals should be the NBA Finals all the time.
I totally get what you're saying. I actually have no problem with the East Coast West Coast thing. And I think the main reason they do that is because then you pull in a wider audience. Like the problem with like baseball having like a California World Series is like, oh look, 49 other states don't care anymore. And this at least draws in, like, coastal interest, I guess. What I would argue for is I do like the seeded system. It's kind of like a wild card system to me. And I think it gives a lot of other teams, like, more possibilities when baseball introduced something like this with the double wild card system. A lot of other teams that would have been fringe to lower teams are all of a sudden like, hey, I could get that second wild card spot. I could make the playoffs this year. And then once you get in the playoffs, you know, anything can happen.
Yeah.
So I'm very into this, like... One thing I am a little questionable about is that means that now 20 teams would make the playoffs out of a 30-team league, which means two-thirds of the teams are going to the playoffs, but at the same time, you keep fan bases engaged longer. The only thing I don't like about this system is how many games the potential loser of that 7-8 game has to play. I think the way they should do it instead is that 7 plays 10 and 8 plays 9, and then just the winners of those two games move on. That would be my opinion. Then you keep it to one game each. You're not making... Two teams play like two more games. You just go one in, and then you're into the playoffs.
And then how do you seed those two?
Whoever was the higher seed. So
if it's like 9 and 10, 9 will be 7, 10 will be 8.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the way I do it. I think the proposal that you read is a little too.
It's too wordy.
Yeah, it's too wordy.
Well, there's a lot going on.
It's too complicated. Like you make it simpler. Just have them play one game each, and then get them in. As you were talking about it, though, you kind of convinced me. I'd be okay with doing that, like a 16-team thing, or like adding in the wild card into that, and then doing it from there. So I'd be okay with either of those. But yeah, I think I do like the wild card idea.
I think it's good how it is. I think there are a lot of people complaining about, you know, the Western Conference being a lot stronger, you know, year in, year out.
They're not wrong.
And they're not wrong. But it's not a broken system. I think you've gotten the best teams in the NBA the past 3 years. I think the Warriors and the Cavs have been the best teams in the NBA the past 3 years.
Yeah, that's true. I think regardless, of the playoff format, the Warriors and Cavs would have met in the finals.
Yeah. The last three.
I agree. So I don't think it's broken. I mean, obviously, it stinks for teams like the Spurs, Thunder, when they had KD, because, I mean, they could have argued that they might have been able to beat the Cavs. And for all intents and purposes, the Thunder should have beaten the Warriors in 2016.
Yes, they should have.
3-1 lead. The first 3-1 lead that no one Warriors. Talks about. I won't get too salty about that.
The Indians also blew a 3-1 lead.
They're the last
one. Just saying. LeBron jinxed them.
LeBron did jinx them.
With those 3-1 cookies, and then they blew a 3-1 lead to the Cubs. That was really
do you remember
funny.
Like the Halloween party too? Oh, my God.
No, yeah. LeBron. I saw that, and I was like, you clearly do not have baseball superstitions like I do, because I would never do that. And then literally what I thought was going to happen.
Anyway, I like the current system. I agree with Chris. I don't want to see the Charlotte Hornets play in a play-in game. They're sitting at 24-33. And they would play into a game. They would play to the Detroit Pistons, and then the winner of that game would have to play either Miami or Philadelphia. And for the team that's sitting in the 7 seed, after all that hard work of getting into the top 8 spots, now you have to play an extra game just to be in the playoffs?
The NBA season is too long. Is long enough as it is. You don't need them to play extra
games. You don't need more
games. Yeah.
Yeah, that's but it gives that motivation to those lower teams to not just tank. Like, tanking is a big issue in the NBA right now, what with, like, the Mavericks comments that that they made on the podcast. And like,
tank.
No, and then Cuban went on a podcast recently and was like, yeah, we tanked, and there's all this outrage. And then, like, the whole thing about Philadelphia, like, trust the process and all that, like, if you make it so more teams can get in, more teams take the season seriously and don't try to tank, because all of a sudden they're like, wow, there's another playoff spot. I have a better chance. But then you also get those things like the A's when we got that second wildcard spot, and they're like October, and then we didn't actually play in October because we got eliminated on September 29th. But, yeah.
But if you're Philadelphia, you're in the 7th spot right now. You're sitting at 30-25, and now you have to play an extra game against Miami.
And
then if you lose... Yeah, it 7-8 play. Under
really?
The system I read, yeah. 7-8 play, 9-10, and then the winner.
Oh, see, that's,
remember
that's
all
why,
that?
That's why I would change it to my system. I'm
okay.
just saying.
Well, if we're talking about the system that is being reported on, Philadelphia, I'm in the 7th seed. I'm the highest seed out of all these teams. I am in the playoffs in the old system. I have to play Miami first. If I happen to slip up in that one game against Miami, now I have to play another game against either Detroit or Charlotte just to be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah.
If you're one of the top 8 teams in your conference, or under Chris's format, I'm even fine for a 16 seeded. If you're one of the top 16 teams in the NBA, you should be in. I think adding new teams and adding new games isn't the problem. The problem is trying to balance each of the conferences, and this system that they brought up doesn't do that.
Yeah, there's just too many hoops to jump through. There's no pun intended anywhere in that. But there's just too many hoops to jump through. There's too many more extra things you really have to account for. There's too many at the end of the season. You're not going to be like, oh, now we got to play 9. We just got to make sure we beat 9.
See, but the NBA is never going to take games away, because that's the whole point. Where do they make their money? They make
money on
games.
They won't take games away.
They won't take games away, and adding games adds more revenue. So that's why I think that if it does happen, it should happen my way. But they also want to keep they need to keep those fan bases that are fringe playoff teams invested, even once the playoffs start, because it's more money, it's more revenue. That's what sports is all about. It's the business of sport. Like, as much as we love sports, we all know money comes first in sports.
Yep.
There is no sport where that's not true.
All right.
Maybe
well,
not your community softball team. That's just bragging rights. Not on the back.
All bragging rights.
That's what you think.
All
Somebody's
baby.
Making money off of
Someone's
you.
Someone's going to be making
Shirt
money.
Sales, man.
That's true. Merchandise.
Yeah.
Buy my merch.
All right. The last bit on the bark today is going to be sort of our outlook on the second half of the NBA season. Teams to watch. There's a lot going on in the NBA. I mean, obviously, the Warriors are sort of on a slump, but they're still one of the best teams in the NBA.
They're still the Warriors.
The Rockets are really good. The Cavs are sort of coming back, but we're going to sort of go outside the box and pick some other teams. Chris, who do you think? Who's your team to watch? They could be bad, they could be good, but who's your team to watch?
Now, my team to watch is the Miami Heat, especially since they've acquired Dwayne Wade. Now they have sort of that veteran experience, that
leadership.
And, and Wade wants to be there. He really never wanted to be in Cleveland. He always wanted to go back home to Miami because, you know, he's got family there and things like that.
I mean,
that.
He's been there for so long.
He's just so connected to that city that he just, you'll know he'll be like heavily invested in it. But obviously they have Goran Dragic, who averages 17.4 points a game and obviously made the All-Star game because of all those injuries. They still have Hassan Whiteside, who averages a double-double, 14.2 points, 11.9 rebounds. You got guys like Dion Waiters, Josh Richardson, Wayne Ellington, good old Kelly Olynyk from Gonzaga.
Yeah,
he's averaging 11 points a game. So I think just I think it's pretty, you know, a sleeper team. I think people sleep on them a lot, especially a lot of teams in the Eastern Conference. Obviously, like, they're not the flashy team like Philadelphia or Milwaukee, you know, those trendy picks. But I think Miami could surprise people if given the chance.
Yeah, yeah. It's the rejuvenation of team basketball, the Hawks team basketball. So
team,
we'll see
basketball.
Where it goes. Yeah, from the Corver Bird. But I like the Heat. I think they are poised to do some really good things. I also just really like their Vice jerseys. They're so cool.
Yeah. Yep, true.
For my pick, actually, like, you guys know I love me some Raptors, and they're actually leading the East right now. But
they're just a regular season team, Andy.
They've completely changed. We've talked about this before. They've changed the way they played. But the team I'm actually going to pick is the Denver Nuggets. Kind of under the radar team, Jokic, and they've got Jamal Murray. Wilson Chandler's been playing better. I think they have a real shot. Like, you kind of forget about them. They don't play, same thing. They're not a flashy pick, but they're sitting in the sixth seed right now. They're above the Blazers and the Pelicans and the Clippers. Even the Jazz, who've been streaking, but like, the Nuggets are up there, man. Like, they're only half a game behind the Thunder,
yeah,
with all of their star power. And so I think they could. I don't think they're going to do a lot in the playoffs because they are a regular season team. But at the same time, they're going to make the second half interesting. And a lot of people kind of forget that they're there. So that's my team to watch.
I think they have a lot of players that match up really well. And if they can move into that fifth spot and play.
Yeah, they're very versatile players.
And play the Timberwolves, who Jokic can match up with Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, they have the matchups to match up with the T-Wolves. And I think the Spurs as well.
I would say Towns is the one player who I wouldn't necessarily put Jokic up. Jokic isn't a great defender, in my opinion.
Sure.
But I do think they have other pieces that match up with the rest of the Timberwolves really well. And if, like, you limit Towns to being their only offensive weapon, like, then I definitely think, yeah, they could do some damage in the playoffs. But I think they are a regular season team. But they're going to make the second half interesting. And I think they could shock some people with where they finish.
Well, my team is one that you just mentioned, Andy. It's the Utah Jazz. 11 wins in a row. 11. They lead the league right now in that win streak. Rookie Donovan Mitchell is putting together a rookie of the year caliber type year.
He would be my rookie of my year.
He's the front runner, right?
Yeah, I would say he's the front
runner. I think a lot of people like Ben Simmons.
He's fallen off the last couple weeks. Yeah. Like, we were hyping him up before the All-Star break and everything, but his production's dipped a little bit, and Donovan Mitchell's going crazy.
It's going to be closer than I thought it was going to be.
Absolutely.
I really thought
Ben Simmons
was running away.
If you asked me at the beginning of the year, I was like, Ben Simmons, Jason Tatum.
Dennis Smith
maybe
Jr.
Maybe Dennis Smith Jr. Honestly, with everything going on in the Mavs right now, I wouldn't.
It's rough.
No one wants to touch the Mavs right now.
Yeah.
You read that SI report?
Yes.
Yeah.
But anyway, you look at Donovan Mitchell, who's averaging almost 20 points a game in his rookie year. Gobert, obviously, averaging over 10 rebounds. One of the best,
rim defenders
in the league.
Definitely.
I mean, one could argue he was the defensive player of the year last year.
Yeah.
And this is coming from a Warriors fan.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, he was incredible last year.
I think people kind of forget it because Steph Curry.
He put him in a blender.
On him. Yeah.
Or not a blender, a blender.
Yeah.
I
mean,
he had a great year.
Yeah, definitely.
And just that team is really, really solid.
Starting to click, that's for sure.
I don't know if they can keep up where they're going right now, but if they keep playing like they do, they don't have to win every game, but if they keep playing like they do, they're going to be a team to watch.
It's funny because in the Northwest Division, they're still last in the division.
Isn't that crazy?
All the teams are over 500, Minnesota, Oklahoma City, Denver, Portland.
That is just a loaded division.
You know what's funny, though? The last team that – do you guys know who the last team they lost to was?
Who?
The Hawks.
Really?
They lost to the Hawks. Then they've beaten the Pistons, the Raptors, the Warriors, the Spurs,
I remember that.
The Pelicans, the Blazers, the Spurs again. They've got some big games coming up against the Rockets and the Timberwolves, which I think will be real tests, obviously. But it's not like they're beating, like, the Suns over and over and over again.
And they're one of those teams that you feel like, oh, right before the All-Star break, they're catching fire. But they could easily be like, all right, All-Star break is over. The Warriors are like, okay, we're going to start playing basketball now.
Yeah.
And all the teams start playing like the Spurs have been kind of on the down low right now. They're going to start playing like the Spurs in a little bit.
Yeah, but Kawhi's not playing.
Yeah, I was about to say, what about Kawhi?
Kawhi's not playing.
That falling out.
But you can't rule out Greg Popovich.
That's true.
And that's very true.
You can't
That's
do
very
it.
True. He pulls these players out of nowhere.
He's that Bill Belichick of the
of Also,
the
you got to root for DeJounte Murray.
But people like him, though.
That's true.
But so, I see what you mean. I see what you mean.
Yeah, yeah.
So I do like the Jazz. They're my team to watch, not because I think they're going to do really well, but just to see how they respond after this big streak.
Definitely. Definitely an interesting team to watch.
All right, and that wraps up our show for today. Thank you for listening to The Box Seat. This has been Alec Dietz,
Chris Ankiko,
and Andy Amashta. If you want to join the conversation on Twitter, please tweet us at Box Seat Podcast. Thanks again, and we'll see you next Friday.
Did you know Peruvians have their own type of Chinese food? Or that Vietnamese food is heavily influenced by French cuisine? Have you ever wondered what other cultures' junk food is like? Explore these topics and more right here on the Soundbite Network. My name is Didi Madigan, and I'm the host of Home Plates, a podcast all about food. Catch up on the first season of Home Plates on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, and Stitcher. New episodes air every Wednesday.
For more like this and other great shows covering sports, science, relationships, and the arts, visit the Soundbites website, uwpodcast.com. That's uwpodcast.com.